You're listening to.
You're listening to.
The Homo Homie Podcast.
Representing, educating, and unifying our queer comunidad.
Also, a gay craft course 101 for the hetero. I'm your host, Eric V.
And I'm your co-host, Jose Resendez.
A fun kickback podcast for all our homo homies and raza.
We invite you to download, stream, and share
to find out what's good in the hood. Welcome to the Homo Homie Podcast. I'm your host, Eric B., also known as the Homo Homie. And please welcome my co-host, Jose Resendez.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
So before we get into our episode, we want to give a disclaimer and a content warning. So if you're listening, we would recommend that you put this show on pause if there's children around or anybody that would not want to hear what we're discussing. Why is that, Jose? Because
we about to go get in deep. Booty deep.
Booty deep. All kinds of deepness up in that hole, girl.
Elbow deep?
Maybe foot deep. I don't know.
I've never done that.
All right. Okay. So now that you put the children away, let's talk. Before the year had started, we actually promised you guys that we're going to bring more educational, fun content and talk about sex and talk about, you know, the joys of it and also the health benefits of sex and what to do for your partners, whether you're a bottom or a top, right?
Or verse.
Hey. Or as they say in Spanish, pasivo, activo, or versátil.
Is that how you say it?
I think so. Versátil? I don't know, but I'm bottom verse, so...
Oh,
I'm a big old bottom girl. I like to take it in the booty hole.
We knew that, by the way.
Thanks.
But thanks for the exclusive.
All right. All of a sudden. But I ran into this doctor on TikTok. Now, TikTok has literally been transforming the social media world galore. There's millions and millions of subscribers on there. There's all kinds of content. And I'm pretty sure you have stumbled upon TikTok and like scrolling for hours and hours and hours. And we want to talk about the degrading of bottoms of people within the community, the LGBTQ plus community. They always label bottoms as being overly feminine, being the woman, always the weaker one, the lesser one, which is not true.
Right.
And
I think it's also, they're just stereotypes.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know who it is to blame also, obviously within our own community, we always judge each other.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most degrading comes from within our, you know, from our brothers and sisters and, but also media, mainstream media. You know, when you see a gay couple on TV or in a movie or something like that, there's always that, the one that's more masculine and it's like the top figure. And then the one that's more feminine and flamboyant is like the bottom figure. You know, those are just stereotypes. And I don't know if we're going to be able to get away from those. And I don't know if us ourselves are adding, how do you say it?
Adding fuel to the fire?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if we're the ones that are adding the fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
You know, because some gay couples love to play house.
Yeah,
they love that role. You know, they love fitting into those roles, you know. And one thing that I do want to talk about real quick is I was talking with, remember Edwin Sotos? We had him on the podcast before.
Yeah.
He was saying, why do we say like I'm a bottom or I'm a top versus saying like I bottom or I top? We label us as like the thing that does the thing.
Rather,
does that make
yeah,
sense?
Yeah, I get
like,
it.
Like, oh, he's a bottom, he's a top, and yeah. It's like, no, why? These are activities. These are sexual positions. They're not who we are. So don't be defining yourself by your position or role in bed. You know, outside of the bed, you're Eric. You're this person. You're awesome. You don't have to be like I'm a bottom.
I just so happen to like
to bottom. You prefer to bottom when you're in bed.
I can go versatile. But I prefer bottoming. And I think that's also another issue that I have with looking for partners, because I have this exterior of looking very hard, very masculine, very dominant. And then when I start talking.
When you're not in drag.
Yes, when I'm not in drag. When I start talking and I also let the person that I will be hooking up with know that I'm a bottom, that's when it's just like, oh, okay, never mind. Like, oh, I thought you were a top.
They assumed
I was a top. And it sucks. It really does suck. I mean, we have to get away from those stigmas and stereotypes because it's not really good for our community at all.
And a lot of, but also like You know, two bottoms don't make a top. What y'all gonna do in bed?
Hey, but two bottoms can work together as well. Why not?
Oh, you mean as a couple or in sex?
In sex or as a couple as well. I mean, if you're open to the possibility, like if you really like, okay.
Like a double-headed dildo?
That would work. Let's put this as an example. Me and you are dating. We're both bottoms, but we're really into each other because we like each other's. Don't laugh at me! Because we like each other very much. Like, we're into each other. I like your personality. You're cool to hang out with.
Okay, we could be girlfriends.
You're cute. Okay. But we could be really... This is an example, Jose. We could be really into each other. And we can explore the possibilities of bringing in a top. You know, like... Or playing with toys. If you want. There's some people that do that. Anyways, guys, I'm just putting it out there. We're going to be discussing about the butthole, and we have an amazing doctor with us that I'm really happy to bring on.
Yes, please bring in the professional, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Let me introduce you guys to him. His name is Dr. Carlton, who is a gay gastroenterologist who was raised in the Deep South and made his way to training at the Mayo Clinic for a top-tier medical education. He landed his dream job in San Diego, where he is married to an amazing Latino guy and has two kids. While he serves the entire community medical needs, he is particularly proud to serve the local LGBTQ community in San Diego as a resource for healthcare without judgment or shame. He stumbled onto TikTok during the pandemic and realized the need and the hunger for anal sex education, and not just for the LGBT family, but also women and straight men interested in butt play.
Holler, straight men.
Okay. So many people are embarrassed to talk about anal sex or ask questions about it, but let's face it, most people want to know how to do it right, do it well, and do it safely. Who better than to ask a gay GI doctor who not only knows the medical side of things, but is no stranger to anal sex himself. Yes. So get ready to break out your favorite lube as we ease you in after this break. You're listening to the Homo Homie Podcast. And we are back from the break. We were really excited, and we hope you're lubed up and ready to go, because we have the doctor in the house who's going to give us all the facts face down, ass up. Please welcome from San Diego, Dr. Carlton. Hey, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. I'm so excited to be here.
So I ran into Dr. Carlton on TikTok, and I was scrolling one day while in the toilet. And
appropriate,
right? I came across your page and I was really excited, like, at the content that you're sharing with all your followers. And you have garnered over 130,000 followers, which is crazy. And I just wanted to know what motivates you in continuing to create that content.
Yeah. So the response from people all over the world to initial content has been just amazing. I initially did this to, just kind of give a little information to the gay community. But my first video that I did about butt stuff was received very well, not only by the gay community, but also straight women and straight men. So suddenly the majority of my following was female, which was not what I intended, but I was very pleased about. And then over time, it's shifted more to about 53% male, 47% female. And what's motivated me to keep content creation going is the response from people. I've had people from all over the world tell me how important this is to them, what a light it's shining into their lives. I've had amazing connections with people that I had no idea would ever happen. I've gotten some people out of some pretty sticky situations. And
that I'd like to hear.
and it's a little more serious than it sounds. You know, there's some people in that live in Middle Eastern countries who could be executed for being gay. And right. Mm-hmm. I've had a few people panic saying, oh, my God, there's something on my butt. I don't know what it is. I'm terrified if I go to the emergency room, they're going to find out that I've been bottoming and they're going to execute me. So,
wow. So you're actually helping lives internationally.
Yeah.
So
I'll say, well, you know, send me a vanishing picture on Instagram. Show me what you're dealing with and I'll do my best to help you. And this one person who happened to be in Iran or Saudi Arabia, just had a hemorrhoid. So I mean, to be able to relieve his mind that he's not going to die from a hemorrhoid because of his sexuality. I mean, who knew that this would happen? Wow. This is not where this was intended right. to go at all, but it's amazing that it has.
Yeah, no, exactly. Especially when it's somebody in another country and they're freaking out, you know, like the possibility of them getting murdered. Like, it's crazy to think that that's still happening in this day and age.
So do you think that this response to your content is because it's a taboo topic? Because I've seen like acne doctors that are pretty popular on TikTok. You know, people are obsessed with seeing like Dr. Pimple Popper. There's also Dr. Miami on Snapchat, who's like world famous for his like butt lifts and like boob implants right. and things like that. And I think that when it comes to this topic of like just, you know, butts, it's like stuff that you don't want to ask, you know? So when you see it on TikTok, it's like a fun, digestible.
Right. Exactly. You know, obviously there's a hunger for this kind of education because people never got this in school, you know, and mm-hmm. sex ed, we got penis vaginal sex. If we were lucky enough to get that, a lot of people didn't even get that. I mean, I grew up in the Deep South and they barely, you know, shook a condom at us and said, okay, this is how you protect yourself. And that was about it.
I got a banana. That's all I got was a condom over a banana and over and done.
In high school?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So, and what was shocking to me, even in training, was that in college and med school and residency and fellowship, not once did we have a butt sex talk about, you know, how to do things right, how to do things safe, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. So between all my years of education and, you know, being gay, I've just kind of decided to put it all together and help people who, sadly, you know, I didn't have that information growing up and I wish I did. And now people all over the world are telling me, oh my God, I wish I had this when I was 20. This is amazing.
Do you see this type of education trickling into curriculums like at universities and medical school, especially now with like LGBT, you know, being more mainstream in that sense?
I should hope it's happening. I've had some different LGBT teen centers around the country who've contacted me and said, hey, we downloaded your videos off of TikTok and we're showing them in our education classes to our kids so that they understand, you know, what's safe, what's not safe, you know, in the appropriate setting. And, you know, when you're on TikTok, you can't exactly cross a line. You have to be careful because they'll take you down or ban you pretty easily. So these videos kind of walk a line that give you enough of what you need to know without being dirty or pornographic.
Right. Right. You know, coming from a Latino background, from a Latin family, mm-hmm. You know, you talked, Jose, you talked about curriculum and stuff. We don't even talk about it in our own families about sex and like what to expect, you know, the STIs, all that stuff. It's really taboo.
Right.
And I understand that, yeah, you know, you're married to a Mexican.
Yeah.
And you have your Mexican husband with you. So I would like to get his perspective on things about how he, when he came out to his family, what it was like. And did they ever talk about sex?
Hi, I'm Alex Thomas. I never really, to be honest with you, I never really said I'm gay to anybody, but they kind of got it and knew from early on. But having said that, I wasn't like, I'm like, this is who I am. I'm not, how do I say it without offending people?
Well, he's one of nine children and so, you know, huge family. And I think they all knew, but they didn't want to say they knew.
They all knew.
Like, because he was more feminine.
That sounds Hispanic.
Yeah, actually, that sounds very typical.
Looking back on it now, they were actually more cool about it than I gave them credit for, because I was really nervous that they were all going to be terrible about it. So, and I kind of, you know, ran away from family because of that. Mm-hmm. But as an adult later on, as I came back home, I realized that, you know, most of my family didn't care. They knew from early on and they didn't care.
Yeah. I mean, you're one of nine. So like it was bound to happen.
Yeah. How'd your mom respond?
My mom cried for 3 days. She wanted to send me to a seminary school. Yeah.
Wow.
I just looked her in the face and said, look, all I need you to do is love me. And then I went off and joined the Navy.
And now that you have married a white doctor, had they said anything about marrying a güero?
A güero? No, but there's a funny story here about my dad and him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so like he was from a different generation, right? Oh, he was 72 and he died. different generation, but, and again, I never looked him in the face and said, look, Dad, I'm gay. I never did that. He knew, right? He knew. I think one of my brothers or sisters told him, but you know, there was never proof, and it really didn't matter, honestly, because my dad knew. And when we got married, he came around, he knew me, he met the kids, he stayed with us a couple of times. But the funny story is that, you know how like old generation, different generation people, Hispanics, yep. He was really, my dad was really terrified of my husband, because my husband is not only gay, my husband's a GI doctor, right? Doctors who do that for a living. So he was really terrified about that for a while.
He would turn his butt away from me every time I was around him. It's pretty funny.
I was just going to ask, has he ever checked your dad's rectum?
I don't think that happened, but I knew like he was really nervous to be around him until I said, look, it's just medicine. It's really not like he's looking to, you know, be a predator for anybody. He's a normal guy. We're all normal people. Cause he had no idea. Right. Like we're normal people. We just like men or like the same sex. It's not a big deal to us. Why should it be to you?
Exactamente. Yeah, totally. And I totally feel you. So how long have you guys been together for?
Actually, we've been together going on, 15 years, 16 years now?
Yeah, almost 16 years.
16 years.
I bet you guys have great sex. Since you're a butt doctor, so.
I don't know. Does that play into it?
That we do.
And what's it like knowing that your partner is like TikTok famous, is getting recognized?
To me, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Not yet. It hasn't. Anyway. Yeah.
Not yet.
He's not famous at all.
Are you famous?
The only thing you got to worry about is just to keep on hitting that right spot for him. Huh?
That's right. Keep hitting that right spot. You have nothing to worry about.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us.
That's awesome. Thank you. All right. Love you.
Speaking of hitting the right spot, let's talk about it.
Yeah, most definitely. We will. We'll get into that right now. I just want to do quickly that there has been a recent study with cancer.org that African Americans were 20% more likely to have colon cancer and Hispanics were at 11%. I don't know if you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like needed to know within our communities about that educational portion of colon cancer screenings, HPV, hemorrhoids. Talk about that.
Yeah. You know, in the general population for years, the recommendation for screening for colon cancer has been age 50. That has, because of the studies that you mentioned, has dropped in minority populations to age 45. And now the overall recommendation is, say, everybody at 45. Insurance companies haven't quite caught up to that part of things yet. A lot of them still only cover at 50. But if you are a person of color, especially African-American or Hispanic, talk to your insurance company about what they cover, at what age they cover. There's all kinds of ways around getting colonoscopies. You know, oh, I'm bleeding. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good reason to get a colonoscopy. But make sure that your insurance company covers pure screenings. So for colonoscopy, the reason we do this is to prevent colon cancer. Colon cancer is the second leading cancer killer, right up there, tied about with prostate cancer. It kind of swings back and forth between second and third. Lung cancer is the first. You know, you don't smoke, you don't get lung cancer. You get your prostate checks. Most men up to a certain age are going to end up with prostate cancer, you know, up into the 90s. The increasing incidence occurs with age. But usually prostate cancer is something that people die with and not from. Colon cancer, on the other hand, is very preventable. You know, you do a colonoscopy, you look for polyps, you take them out, you don't get colon cancer. So
what are polyps?
Yeah, polyps are these little growths that are look like little mushrooms in your colon. They're okay. The things that grow and change and transform over time into cancer. So if you take those things out when they're tiny little things, they don't have a chance to become big things and
what makes them pop up?
What makes them grow? You know, for some people, it just happens. We have no explanation why. For some people, you know, smoking is a risk. Obesity and bad diets have been thought to be risks as well. Family genetics is a big part too. If you have a family history of colon cancer, you're supposed to go at age 40 or 10 years prior to the onset of the colon cancer in your family member, whichever came first.
Do bottoms have a higher risk of also getting cancer as well because of that or no?
Bottoms don't have any sort of change in their colon cancer risk. The issue with bottoms is HPV and anal cancer. Anal cancer in general is on the lower scale of cancer deaths, but it's an important issue in our community because nobody wants their butt tampered in any way. We want that to work, and we don't want to have to go through surgery or radiation or anything like that. Human papillomavirus is the virus that causes anal cancer.
So HPV.
HPV, yeah. So HPV is the same virus that causes cervical cancer. So early on, young girls were getting the HPV vaccine, and then they started giving it to boys too. So it's approved up to age 26 for most insurance companies, but I have gay doctors in San Diego who are giving it to guys up as old as 70 because they're newly active sexually and haven't been exposed to it. So why not prevent cancer while you can? So, you may have to pay out of pocket, but technically, you know, insurance covers up to 26. It's approved up to 46 and you can get it off label after 46.
Now, is there a connection with, being like having gay sex with or anal sex with prostate cancer?
Not with prostate cancer. And there's actually been studies that show the more you ejaculate in a month, the less likely your risk of prostate cancer is. So if you ejaculate more than 21 times in a month, you have a decreased risk of some forms of prostate cancer.
21 times is a lot.
I think I've been doing that all this pandemic, so I should be good.
Wow.
I was like, hey, girl, move my little hand.
Nothing wrong with that.
I noticed you put up something about fissures. What are fissures? Because I wanted to ask about that. Mm-hmm. You talked about bleeding, and I've had bleeding sometimes in the past with regarding of that.
So fissures are basically little tears in the lining of the anal canal. So if you're looking from the outside in, you know, on the outside you see the external sphincter. So it's the brown eye, you know. So it's a circular muscle. It's made out of skeletal muscle. So you can actually control that by clenching down on it. And that's what an anal Kegel is. So
I'm doing one right now.
Yeah, exactly. We're all doing Nobody it. Knows you're doing it, right? So that's one way to keep things strong and tight down there is to clench and release, clench and release. So just on the inside of that is the internal sphincter, and that's made out of smooth muscle, and you have no control over that. That's involuntary muscle. One of the big things about bottoming is making sure that that sphincter is relaxed, because at resting state, it is pretty tight. If you just jam a big dick in there, you're going to tear your asshole.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts like you wouldn't believe. Speaking from experience, it's happened to me. It's painful, and it's hard to heal for some people, and some people even have to have surgeries to heal it. But but there's ways around that. You know, as far as what causes those tears, it's hard stuff coming from inside out. So if you pass a hard bowel movement too quickly, it can cause a rip or a tear on the way out. So eating a high fiber diet and getting plenty of fluids is going to prevent that from happening. And then when it comes to anal sex, making things relax back there, you know, the bottom or the top, play with it, make it relax. Mm-hmm. I have some great techniques on making that little tiny circular muscle expand out so that it can take something bigger. So if you think, I have this exercise called the butt clock. It sounds stupid, but this is a circle of muscle. So if you lubricate your finger and slide it in about an inch or two, and you pull over to 3 o'clock and hold and press there, that tight circle of muscle is going to expand. So you go over to 9 o'clock after about a minute and do the same thing. You go up to 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock. I think I'm making the sign of the cross. I'm sorry.
It's like butt yoga stretches. It's like, okay, you're going to be blessed and all set.
Your asshole is going to be really blessed at this point. So it's going to relax open and stretch open. So not only are you stretching the external sphincter, but you're also doing the internal sphincter as well. And it's just relaxing things so that things can get in there. And that's how things like fisting happens.
That's like foreplay. Getting fingered before the real thing.
Yeah. I do that to myself before
to
I
yourself?
Do anything. Yeah. I like doing it to myself. It feels good. It's like, it's like playing with.
I don't think I've ever done it to myself. What the other guy's doing.
Yeah. And when you're cleaning out, it's something you can do just before things start. you can lube up and kind of stretch things out a little bit so that you're ready to go. Or you can make it part of foreplay as well. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to use your finger. You could even use a toy if you wanted to.
Or what? Can you get like a bigger douche? Can that like, it does both at the same time. It cleans you and it stretches you.
Well, right? I mean, as long as you're gentle with it, absolutely, for sure. So definitely relaxing things so that you're able to enter without causing a rip or tear is everything. So fiber prevents you from tearing it by having hard bowel movement, and lubrication and relaxation back there helps you prevent an anal fissure from anal sex.
Thank you so much for like explaining the whole like process of how to relax back there.
Yeah.
the anal region. Sure. And we want to get into the butt basics.
Sure.
So, you know, this conversation is not just for the LGBTQ community.
Absolutely.
It's for everyone. It's for the straight community, trans community. And earlier in the introduction, mm-hmm. we talked about like stigmas, you know, like a lot of men fear that getting their butt played with is going to make them gay, or that they're automatically gay. It's not that, correct. It's just it's another stimulation.
Absolutely. You know, we all have a butt. We were all born with one. Well, most of us. Some people have had them surgically removed because of whatever reason. But for the most part, all of us have a butt. Butt sex does not have a gender, a sexuality, should be done without shame. It's fun. It's pleasurable. It doesn't make you gay. It doesn't make you bi. It doesn't make you straight. It's just part of our body. And one of the things that I think straight guys in particular really miss out on is that stimulation that happens back there. Mm-hmm. The simultaneous stimulation by hitting the male G spot, which is the prostate, which we'll talk about in a little bit, along with the stimulation of the penis. I'm telling you, I didn't know what made my eyes roll back in my head until a guy gave me a blowjob and stuck his finger up my ass. I thought I was going to like go to heaven. It was amazing.
Oh no, that'll make your eyes roll back and your toes curl. Trust
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
I like when they play with my little gooch right there where they lick the gooch. Or what did you call it?
We were talking about it and I called it a taint.
Yeah.
Or they also call it a grundle.
Yeah. Taint, because it taint your ass and it taint your scrotum. Yeah.
Yes, you said it right. I was trying to say it like that and he was kidding. It ain't your pussy and it ain't your ass.
Right? It's called the perineum. Am I correct?
Perineum or perineum. So basically, uh-huh. It's very rich in nerve fibers down there. So lots of gentle stimulation in that area. It's going to feel great. And part of rimming and part of just play with a lot of toys, you just brush a little bit in that area with your tongue or your finger or the toy, or even blow on it a little bit. It drives a lot of people crazy. So
even thinking about it makes me crazy.
Calm down.
Sorry.
Yeah. So when you mentioned male and female, so mm-hmm. a female has the vagina in the front, and then up a little bit higher up in there is the bladder, and then the rectum is behind there. And then, you know, so the front hole is the vagina, the back hole is the anus, and there's kind of a thin sheath between the rectum and the vagina called the rectovaginal sheath. So I'm sure you've seen, you know, porn before where one guy's in the front and one guy's in the back, and they're just kind of basically just sliding along each other along that thin little, I mean, it's like a centimeter thick, really tiny sheath.
That's gold.
Of mucosa. So that's their setup. And, you know, they don't, their G-spot is usually more vaginal, but I did a straight kink podcast not too long ago and asked the woman who was part of the podcast team, hey, what does it feel like when you get butt sex? And she said that actually for her, when a penis goes into her rectum, it actually hits up against the urethral sponge, which is up against the rectum back there. So mm-hmm. she does get a lot of great sensations. She says for her personally, she can't come that way, but it definitely gives her a lot of sensation. So just because you don't have a prostate doesn't mean you can't have great sensation back there.
Interesting.
Now, for men, obviously, you have the penis and the scrotum in the front. Then you have the perineum, which you talked about, the gooch. And then you have the anal canal. If you slide your finger in about, so your partner's in front of you and bent over. If you slide your finger in about 2 inches and press down at 6 o'clock, that's where the prostate is.
Okay.
Bend over, Jose.
Yeah. You're bent over. We need a visual here.
I'm doing it. My hand and Jose has his finger.
Yeah, so that's where the prostate is. So so obviously if you're on your back, and so like if you're giving head to somebody and they're laying that way with their head that way and you're sucking their dick from the front, if you stick your finger up their ass and go up at 6 o'clock, sorry, at 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock.
That's where the prostate is. So,
and should you, when you go in, should you create like a hook or is it just like a gentle up?
It's just a gentle
what are you trying to do?
Differently, but you can kind of feel, you just kind of go up to the roof of the rectum there.
Okay.
And then you can kind of feel underneath the lining, a little walnut shaped size, flattened area. And that's what the prostate is. And
I heard a lot of guys are able to come also without hands free, without touching themselves with like that.
Absolutely. Some guys are. I'm not one of those, but some guys are. I mean, you've seen it in porn before, guys getting fucked and then they, you know, come hands free. So, definitely that prostate stimulation, especially when combined with stimulation of the glands of the penis, the head of the penis. I mean, some of the most intense stuff you'll ever feel. It's amazing. So that's why I feel sad for people who are afraid to do it because they think it's going to make them gay. They won't let their girlfriend do it while they're getting a blowjob. They won't get, you know, they won't get pegged by the girlfriend because they're demasculinized. You know, butt stuff has nothing to do with masculinity. I mean,
when I ask girls and guys about like not doing it back there, their reasoning is not the gay. It's not the gay excuse. It's the poop. They're like, oh, it's, why would you do that? There's poop back there.
Right. And that's the whole thing that we know about cleaning out and preparing for it. And I think that's been really powerful for a lot of people to ask. And even the young crowd, the older crowd. What drives me nuts is there's a guy on TikTok who says you shouldn't douche and you shouldn't clean out. And I'm like, dude, have you ever had anal sex? I mean, some people are able to get away with it. Some people, but it's a very small minority, in my opinion, that can get away without douching.
Do you feel like the younger you are, the higher chances are of getting away with it?
Yeah, I think so. And that's probably why they feel that way, that you shouldn't do that. Okay. But there's a lot of issues about safety. Is it safe to clean out? You know, there's a lot of information online. Oh, it's going to destroy your bacterial flora, or, oh, it's going to mess up the lining of your rectum. In 20 years of GI medicine, I've never had a case of, oops, he douched too much.
See, I told you. You know what? I told him that when I prep, I take about an hour. No,
this is different.
I take about an hour.
He's talking about douching over years. Like gonna get. But you take over an hour to douche.
Yeah, I try to stick up as much water up there as possible to get everything out.
Yeah, and that's another thing we should talk about. You have to be careful with that.
We are
going to
talk about
because
it. Yes.
Okay, so with that anatomy, when you go in, the rectum is about 8 inches long, and then you have a big turn. And that's where the sigmoid colon is. So if you're flooding lots of water up in there and it hooks around that turn and gets caught right in the middle of sex, you're going to be fucking and you're going to have a big flood. And it's happened to everybody, right?
What did you call that dip?
So the rectosigmoid junction. So there's the rectum and then the sigmoid, but the turn there is called the rectosigmoid junction.
Can penis reach there?
You'd have to have a pretty big penis to reach up there. I mean, you know, 8 inches to 10 inches plus.
Ooh, I think we're going to get into that into the next segment.
No, because I was just wondering why you use so much water, Eric.
Well, Justin, because I don't know. I want to be clean. I don't want to have that accident. But now he's from learning from the doctor, Dr. Carlton, not to use too much water. Because
when you buy the enemas at the store, they're like little. They're like little bottles.
Yeah, but you fill it and squeeze it and then fill it again and squeeze
it. Okay. So that's a good point. So those little enema bottles only have about 60 to 100 milliliters of water in there, right? So I never recommend using what's in the enema bottle because it's really irritating.
Yeah, you throw it out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. So like Fleet's Phosphate Soda and stuff like that, it has a chemical irritant in there so that if you irritate your bottom like that or your rectum and you go to have sex and it's irritated, you're more likely to get a sexually transmitted infection.
Yep.
So.
Oh my God.
So
why? Because it tears?
That chemical irritates the lining of the rectum and causes it to be inflamed, and it's easier for infections to track in that way. So that's why I say use lukewarm water, not cold, not hot. You don't want to put cold water up your ass because it'll make you almost pass out, and you don't want to burn your ass with hot water. So use water that's about body temperature. Squeeze up one of those in, little, in, you know, the cheapest way is one of those little enema bottles, dump it out, wash it out good, fill it up with warm, you know, lukewarm water, squeeze it up in there, let it sit for about a minute, and then release it, and then keep repeating until the water's clear. And that's the line that all bottoms have, you know, I'm waiting for the water to be clear.
Like on average, how long should that take?
Well, I mean, everybody's different. So like for some people it's 5 minutes, for some people it's an hour. So, you know, Eric, just because you take an hour doesn't mean you're a bad person or you're doing it wrong. It's just,
I think you're just, like you're just extra.
No, I'm not. I just, I want to make sure that my top is.
But if he's like, I'm around the corner, I'm pulling up.
Oh, then.
Like I could literally douche in 5 minutes.
Well, that's you.
Well, the other important thing as well that people need to realize is that's where shit comes out. Mm-hmm. So you can't get too bent out of shape if you have a little shit happen. I mean, it's not something anybody wants to have happen. Well, I guess there are some people who want to have that happen, but but it's not something that we have a whole lot of control over sometimes. So you have to let nature be nature sometimes and not get too down on yourself about it, because it's normal and natural.
Yep.
We were talking a little bit earlier about cleaning out. So people get all bent out of shape about, oh, it's going to destroy your bacteria. Well, the next shit you take has so much bacteria in it, it's going to replace whatever's there already. So that's why I don't get too bent out of shape about colonic flora and douching, because there's a big load of it coming right after you eat your next meal.
Now that we're all prepped and ready to go for penetration, what type of lubricants would you recommend? I've heard of flavored lubricants. I've heard of Crisco. I've heard of spit silicone, oil-based, water-based.
Yeah. So good points about Crisco. All that stuff. When it comes to lubrication, if you're using condoms, there are some lubes that are safe and some that are not safe. So anything oil-based like coconut oil or Crisco or petroleum jelly or baby oil will tear up a condom in a heartbeat.
Why is that?
It's just a natural chemical reaction that happens between latex and the oils. It makes it more easily destroyed and easier to break. So if condom use is important to you, then you need to choose either a water-based lube or a silicone-based lube. So water-based, I'm not as much of a fan of, because they can kind of gum up after about, 20 or 30 minutes, and you may need to apply more. Because they're water-based, they can be absorbed in your rectum, and it leaves kind of like a sticky, kind of gummy texture on the inside. Silicone, I love. It's super slippery.
Yeah, my go-to is gun oil.
Yeah, mine too. That's what I love. And then Uber Lube is a plant-based silicone lube that feels really good too, and it's a little easier to clean up. So you can't use silicone lube with silicone toys. So if you have a toy and it's made out of silicone, you can't use silicone lube with it, or it will degrade it over time. And toys are expensive. You don't want to lose your toys.
That's good to know.
Because of a lube choice.
Is silicone also the most slippery one?
I think it's the most slippery one for sure. A lot of people really like coconut oil because you can kind of use it for a massage and then kind of go in and, end up in the rectum. Mm-hmm. But like I say, coconut oil is not good for condoms. So if you're barebacking for whatever reason, you're in a relationship or it's your choice, and I don't judge people for that at all. If that's what you're doing, that's what you're doing. It's definitely, it's going to be for people who aren't using condoms.
And really quick, so I want to interject for our listeners. I don't know if you've ever heard, guys, but there has been people who've used Crisco, or I think it's called butt butter. Is it called butt butter, doctor?
Boy butter. Yeah.
Boy butter.
Boy butter. There you go. For fisting and stuff like that. So would you recommend Crisco?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you're going to do. It's definitely slippery. If protection is not an issue and you really want to get up and fist, it's an option. I prefer silicone lube. Fisting is a whole other story, though. There's a lot more preparation.
Oh, we're gonna get into that in the next.
That's a whole other story. And actually, I actually talked to my friends in the fisting community to get that information for you guys, because.
Well, you know, when you were saying like silicone is more slippery, is that how maybe some of these accidents happen when people get dildos like in their butt and they can't get them out?
You know, great question.
Ooh, good question.
When it comes to things.
Y'all are freaks.
Once things kind of escape and go up in there, the butts are hungry. I mean, it's kind of, you kind of have a natural vacuum there. But when you use a toy, you need to use a toy that's designed for your butt, because without a base, without a trace.
Dios mío, nálgame Dios.
Yeah. I mean, so if you don't have something that has a nice flared wide base on it and you stick it up your ass, there's a chance it could get lost up there. And you, especially right now in the pandemic where there's like nobody available in the ER to take care of you, last thing you want to do is a dildo up your ass.
True.
You're like sitting in the waiting room.
Okay, don't judge me, guys, but one time I experimented with a bottle, an alcohol bottle that had a really long neck. That was with the partner that I was with. I don't know why we did that. We just were curious. And yeah, that thing kept going in. I was like, pull it out, pull it out, pull it out. I had to relax so he could pull it out. I was like,
that's dangerous. It's also glass. What if you broke it?
I was just stupid. I was dumb. I was young. And that's what happened. But yes, I did that. And I'm pretty sure, doctor, that you've seen a lot of other things up the butt.
Yeah. I mean, I've been called for candles, for bottles. You know, I have x-rays of a light bulb up somebody's ass. I don't know how that didn't break, but people stick all kinds of things up there. I had a little 80-year-old Latino man who liked butt play, and he didn't want his wife to find out, so he didn't buy a toy because he didn't want her to find his toy, right? So he was using her tiny little Yakult yogurt bottles that are plastic.
Yes,
and
yes.
He was fucking himself with those little bottles, right? Well, one time the bottle slipped and it went up in there. And so he tried to reach up in there and pinch it. And when he did, it shattered the plastic like a fish hook, and he couldn't pull it out. So poor guy, I had to, you know, here he has to come to the doctor and he's admitted to the hospital and he has something up his ass and he hasn't told anybody what's happened. And he has to explain to me why he has a plastic bottle shattered up his ass. So,
poor guy.
That's why you have to be careful.
Is he able to drive himself there?
Probably.
You get like an Uber XL and you just lay there.
Oh my gosh. All right, guys. Well, we are going to go ahead and take a little break because we can have you warmed up, ready to go. We're going to go into our next segment and we want to just talk about sex and everything that involves butt play. So we're going to go ahead and go elbow deep, baby. We'll be right back right after this break. You're listening to the Homo Homie Podcast with Dr. Carlton. Hey. All right, and we are back from the break, and we are ready to go in hardcore with Dr. Carlton on butt stuff.
I feel like we already did.
And you know, it's about to get even deeper, girl.
I already came in everything.
So let's go through these categories and let us know the pros and cons of each of these categories and what you think and what could we use or what you recommend, right?
Yeah, some of your experience.
So the first one is butt plugs, anal beads.
Okay, butt plugs and anal beads. You know, plugs are from little to big, things that you can put in your butt to help stretch it out. It can help you loosen up prior to having anal sex. Much of the pleasure is in the fullness or the weight of the toy that sits and stays there. So rather than a buzzing or a ribbed action that happens with it, it's just that sensation that it's full back there. And some people get off on that and some people don't. So do you guys have any experience with butt plugs and is that the one
that like you put it up there and you go to work?
Yeah.
Like you go to school or whatever?
Yeah. It just stays up there for a while. Yeah.
How can your butt really like hold on to it that long?
Well, I don't really recommend it for more than a couple of hours, because if you leave something in your butt that long, it can cause ulceration and inflammation in your rectum and it can be painful. So I recommend it for more of a short-term use.
Oh, do you think that some people that are into like, let's say fisting, they do butt plugging as a form of like loosening up to get ready for that?
I mean, it definitely can help for sure. So, you know, the downside of using butt plugs is you have to clean them. You just can't pull out a butt plug and put it on your table and go. You have to clean it afterwards because it's been up your ass. So, So that's one. And then some people just don't like that sensation. So I think you have to experiment for yourself and try to figure out what works and what doesn't. You also have to be very careful putting them in. You don't want to put them in too fast or you could cause a tear like we had talked about earlier.
So what's the widest your butthole can go? How far can it stretch?
You know, technically I've seen in porn people's arms up to shoulder deep in there, you know, so it can, I've seen people take fire extinguishers up their ass in porn before. I mean, we're talking, it can go pretty wide. Somebody said on TikTok, I'm not sure if it's really true or not, that you could take a raccoon up your ass. I don't know why you would want to do that.
I've heard people put gerbils up in there. That's like,
So, I guess
we don't recommend that, guys, by the way. We don't recommend putting animals in your butt.
Yeah, don't put anything like that in your butt. And when we talked earlier about how wide it can get, that tip I was telling you about with the butt clock where you go and push over to the side and up and down, mm-hmm. we use that technique surgically to help dilate people's buttholes to be able to pull things out when they do get things lodged up there. So, definitely. It can go pretty big, and thankfully it can go pretty big because we're able to get things back out without having to cut somebody open.
What about anal beads? Because those seem, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to like ill somebody's fetish, but right. those seem gross to me. I feel like when you take them out, like they're, I don't know. Is it like a smell thing? Like what's the big deal with anal beads?
I've never done anal beads.
I've never done them either.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with anal beads is they can come in a variety of sizes, I guess. So it's like to describe what it looks like, it's like a string of balls and it's
like Mardi Gras beads.
Yeah.
But bigger.
Yeah. But you know, you don't have to stick them all up there. If you're nervous about how much you're putting up in there, you can start with just a couple and see how it goes. The action of those things is more of the rubbing in and out, and the rib nature of ball, string, ball, like that.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where the pleasure is in that. And a lot of people just will start by rubbing them up against the gooch, the perineum, like we talked about, because it feels good with that. What I've been told, I also am not a big anal bead person myself, but what I've been told about anal beads is like, if you have them up there, if you pull them out while you're coming, your orgasm is like really super maximum intense.
Wow.
Dang.
Yeah. So if you use them and you're getting stimulated from the front while you pull them out, that's when you want to, that's where all the action is.
Pull my beads. While you're clutching your pearls.
All right, next. You're so stupid.
But Mardi Gras beads.
But again, like you guys were saying, you know, there's a certain mess that can happen with that, with anything you stick up your ass. So that's kind of the downside. And some people just don't like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What part of the South are you from, by the way?
From South Carolina.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so the next subject is rimming. What's the benefits of rimming and the pros and cons?
Well, honestly, for me, that's one of the highlights. I love that. That's
the best part.
Yeah, okay. It's an art. It really is, and it makes your partner feel really good, and it feels mm-hmm. good for you when it happens. You know, so mm-hmm. The biggest sexually transmitted thing that happens with that in our community in particular is Giardia infection. Giardia is a bug that is passed by fecal oral transmission. So it causes really bad diarrhea, nausea, gas. I mean, we're talking like blow you out of the room kind of gas. So if the bottom has that bug and you go down and eat their ass and they're not like super clean down there, you can get Giardia infection, but usually somebody's going to know if they've had a lot of tummy trouble in the last couple of days. And if you communicate with people, for the most part, you can avoid that. Also, when you go down on somebody, you're going to want to make sure that they're clean, and nobody wants to be dirty when they're getting eaten out anyway. So, you know, get in the shower, start in the shower, get clean and go to town. Now, the further you stick your tongue up in there, the more risk there is of getting something deeper. But generally externally, it's pretty safe.
That's a cream filling.
Hepatitis A and B are also things that you should be concerned about, but most of us are vaccinated against Hep A and Hep B now. So,
yeah. What about, I've seen on Instagram and social media, these scrubs, you know, like butt scrubs for that are meant to make ass eating more pleasurable, like a coffee scrub.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan of anything, chemical or flavored in there because of the irritation that sometimes it can cause. I think was it Vanjie squirts Listerine up her ass or something like that.
She does.
What? Yeah. I've had actually people on TikTok ask me, hey, I heard that you can squirt Listerine up your ass to make it taste better when somebody eats your ass. I'm like, please don't do that. That will burn out of your ass.
Oh, it will burn you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's very, you know how that tingling feeling happens in your mouth? Imagine what that would do to your butthole, you know?
Pucker them lips, girl.
But does it only mess you up if you have like a cut or something down there? Or you're saying that it can create one?
It can create inflammation down there. Yeah.
Inflammation.
Now I think what she ends up doing is using like a few drops in her douche or something like that. But
which would probably, like mint drops.
Yeah. It would probably be less of a big deal. But yeah, in general, you don't want to squirt pure Listerine up your butthole.
Or you could just shower, you know, that's a good.
I'm all about the natural when it comes to sex, when it comes, you know, clean it up in the shower and you're good to go.
What about like a little bit of soap in there just to at least clean it or no?
Well, I think just spreading it apart a little bit and cleaning it with water is probably better. Putting soap in there, like I mentioned before, is an irritant, and that can create inflammation that can lead to, like we talked about with the Fleet's phosphosoda enemas, that can lead to more of a risk for STDs.
Okay, here we go, guys. Elbows and feet. How deep is too deep to go in your booty hole?
Well, I think that's all dependent on the person who's taking it. I have friends in porn who take it shoulder deep, you know, and that is something that you don't do the first time you do it, right?
Right.
You need an experienced top fist fucker to guide you through something like that.
We kind of already talked about this category, but I think we're trying to get at is like, does this really loosen you up over time? You know, there's like these terms like loose bottom and this and that, or power bottom. And I think those are two different things, but, does your ass like muscles,
does they contract stay back? Stretched, or can you do Kegels to put it back together again?
Well, listen, I mentioned before, a couple of my patients are in porn, and I've seen them take, you know, just by accidentally scrolling through Twitter and seeing, oh my God, I know that person. Seen them take, you know, massive things up there. And then when you go and examine them, it's like a normal butthole. So it's very pliable, and it has a tendency to get back down to normal. Now, the longer you're in there and the bigger thing that you put in there, the more it's going to stretch. But I specifically addressed this question to my fisting community, and they said, no, in the long run, we haven't heard of guys having problems with losing their bowels or anything like that. Now, and as far as being loose, you can do the Kegels to try to help stay as tight as possible.
Yeah. We also wanted to talk about, because we mentioned double penetration from a straight sex perspective, right? Like one in the vagina, one in the back there. Double, and then you wrote triple. I've never heard of triple penetration.
Thanks to Pornhub, I've seen a lot of interesting things. I've seen double, I've seen triple.
Yeah. Double penetration. Let's just say I know what that feels like. From one standpoint, you know, the most awkward thing about double penetration is positioning, because you have to have two dicks rock hard up against each other, and they have to be hard.
Yes.
And then you have to have the bottom that's going to be able to take both of those at the same time. But if you have dick to dick going up an ass at the same time, and you're rubbing like this, dick to dick, and it's going up inside, up in an ass, there, I mean, that was a pretty heavenly experience the one time that I remember. I mean, it's pretty amazing, but the positioning is a freaking nightmare.
So I thought it was like, first you sit on one dick, and then you kind of like bend to get the second one in there.
Yeah. I mean, and that's basically what happens, but seriously, trying to maneuver all that is more of an art than it looks like in porn, you know, and porn makes it look so easy, Yeah. But in real life, it is very awkward. Because
they're editing and all that.
So that brings us to the next question, which is prolapsing.
Yeah. So a lot of, you may have heard the term rosebudding or prolapsing.
Yes.
What prolapsing is when the inner lining of your rectum actually drops down out of your asshole and looks like a rosebud.
What?
So some people are really into that, but it can be dangerous for the person who's rosebudding out, because prolapse can become so bad that you can't really control your bowels and you have to end up having surgery with it. So I'm not a fan of that at all. That's more of a situation where the person really needs surgery.
How do you rosebud? If you wanted to rosebud, like, how do you do that?
It's like going to the bathroom. You got to push it out.
Right.
But a lot of people just can't physically do that because you're not supposed to be able to push out your rectum out like that. That's kind of an abnormality that people have. So you shouldn't be, maybe hemorrhoids can come out a little bit, but the whole lining of your anus should, or your rectum should not pop out.
Have you ever prolapsed, Eric?
No. No? I've never had it that bad, girl. Maybe a little petal of my rosebud, but not the whole thing. Well,
some people have a little hemorrhoid pop out from time to time, and they think that that's rosebudding. That's not rosebudding.
The hemorrhoids, where can they happen at?
Okay, so that's a great question. And that's one of the things that is really the bane of the bottoming community is hemorrhoids. So normally you have external hemorrhoidal veins, which are a circle of veins around the outside of your asshole. And then on the internal side, you have the internal hemorrhoidal veins. So external ones you can see, like if you spread out your butt cheek and you see this big purple thing, that's an external hemorrhoid.
Damn.
Internal ones you can't necessarily always see. Now, external ones can do what's called thrombose, which means they get a blood clot in there and they get really, really super painful. You can't sit down. You actually have to have sometimes surgery to kind of open that up and drain out the clot. Internal ones can be treated with banding surgically, but the biggest thing for hemorrhoids is prevention. Plenty of fiber, plenty of fluid, so you're not straining. Because anything that makes you strain and push down is going to push the blood flow into those veins. So by keeping on a high fiber diet with plenty of fluids, keeping your bowels kind of bulky and soft, you're not going to develop hemorrhoids as much as if you were straining for bowel movements all the time.
I had one a long time ago where, because I was pushing so hard in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I did a sitz bath and then I also just kind of rubbed it and I kind of pushed it in back in.
Yeah.
It was on the outer lining. So is that, that's the right way to do it, right?
Yeah. So basically, prevention is high fiber diet and fluids. If you have an active one, then sitting in a warm tub of water, which is a sitz bath, will help shrink it over time. You sit in just about that much water for about 15 minutes, 3 to 4 times a day. And then there are topical creams that you can use hydrocortisone cream. You can buy over-the-counter preparation H, but it really isn't effective.
There's these capsules. There's some capsules now that they
say. There's something called a suppository that also is basically hydrocortisone that is inside a cod liver oil or shark liver oil bullet sized thing that's solidified. But as soon as you stick it in your butt, it melts and the steroid kind of evens out throughout the area that's affected.
Can you use one of those as lube?
I mean, you technically could, but the thing about those steroid creams is they can over time they can cause a degradation of the lining there because of what steroids normally do. So it's not advised for long-term use at all.
You should only use them if you really need them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you said with your hemorrhoid, you pushed it in and then that's, you're done with it.
It's still there
or do they disappear, doctor? Like they're gone?
Well,
do we all have them in us? Well, we all have the
veins there and we have a tendency for them to push out. And so they can kind of shrink and also kind of expand over time. So they can flare or they can be normal, they can be non-existent. So The biggest thing is keeping things moving so that you're not causing anything that can flare them. Mm.
What would you recommend for a good fiber diet? Because we also want to talk about Pure for Men, because we see that a lot on social media.
Right.
It's one of those products that's pushed heavily with the LGBT community.
Right. And
I was just wondering, is that too much fiber, or do those things really work?
Fiber is important. I am not paid by Pure for Men to advertise them. So I will tell you and be honest with you that Metamucil was a lot cheaper and does the same thing.
Mm, good to know.
Yeah. So the honest opinion, yeah, fiber works. Pure for Men, probably great, but it's just fiber. Why spend $40 on a bottle of fiber pills when you can just buy Metamucil over the counter?
Or you can eat a whole apple pie. I'm just kidding. Apples are made of fiber. Yeah. All right, guys. So now we're going to kind of go in a little deeper. And this one is kind of like a warning per se, because we do not recommend to do this, but it is out there. And we just want to educate our listeners and go there. So there's this thing called felching, where somebody ejaculates in the bottom, and they push out the semen from the anus. The bottom pushes out the semen.
Okay.
And then the person that inseminated them licks it. What is that not healthy? Healthy?
What do you mean we don't recommend that?
It's felt maybe. Let's take it from the doctor.
So that is definitely a thing. It really depends on how clean things are down there with the bottom. So if you have a lot of shit mixed in the semen, it's not going to be a good thing for you to be putting in your mouth. But if it's relatively clean, I mean, it's not something I advise to do, but it's probably in the end probably going to be okay. One interesting thing I want to bring up to you guys and to your listeners, we talked about Listerine a little bit earlier. There are some studies that suggest that if you get cum in your mouth or in your throat, that if you gargle with Listerine after that, and I'm talking about a good 15 to 30 second gargle with Listerine in your throat and then spit it out, there is a decrease in the amount of bacteria in your mouth. So if you had an encounter with somebody who had gonorrhea and you had their cum in your mouth, you could decrease your risk of transmission of gonorrhea by rinsing out with Listerine after. The studies are still going on. There's a guy in Australia who's doing a big study right now.
I've been doing that for 10 years.
Yeah, honestly, it can't always hurt
Listerine
you.
After a hookup. Yeah.
Yeah, it can't hurt you, so why not? You know, suck a dick or whatever, go do some Listerine after.
There you go. Suck a dick, but save a life, and do some Listerine.
But I also heard, like, you shouldn't brush your teeth before giving head, because, you know, you can cut your gums.
Right, yeah, because there's a tendency to cause gum irritation. So, yeah, that's a good point.
The next thing I'd like to talk about is chemicals that the community uses to enhance sexual pleasures and experiences. And two of those chemicals is poppers and cocaine.
Right.
I've heard poppers where you sniff them and they call it video cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
You sniff the video cleaner, it sends a sensation on your body and you get really heated and you supposedly are supposed to loosen up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that bad for you or good for you?
Well, listen, you know, drugs are drugs. And they're always, you know, there's always going to be a downside to everything you do. And the more you do of something, the more risk there is. Poppers are amyl nitrite. And what they do is you sniff them and they cause a dilation in the blood vessels. So you get a head rush, you get euphoric. For some people, it increases their sex drive and their sensitivity. Some people, it makes their dicks harder. Some people, it makes them go soft. It's kind of hard to predict. You know, everybody's different. And definitely for some people, they feel like it loosens them up to be able to have better anal. But at the same time, there are risk factors that go with using poppers. You can drop your blood pressure really low. You can have chest pain, headaches, nosebleeds.
You can also get addicted to them, right?
Totally. And, you know, I've had one person that I know tell me a story of them being in a sauna in somewhere like Madrid or somewhere. And, you know, you're in a sauna, so you're already like hot as hell and you're sweating like crazy. And some guy's in there sniffing poppers left and right for like an hour. He had a heart attack and died because, I mean, you know, you do it that long in that kind of a situation, you're setting yourself up for a bad event to happen because it does decrease your blood pressure. So, you know, if you're going to do it, that's your choice. I mean, I'm not as a doctor going to tell you to go do drugs, but if you know, let's be realistic about what happens in our community. It happens a lot. Do you guys have any, and this isn't any judgment or anything. I tried it and it gave me headaches, so I didn't like it.
Ditto. I did the same thing and I didn't like it because it gave me a headache and I didn't like the rush. It
was I didn't like poppers either. Mm-hmm. What I don't like about poppers, it's a huge turnoff when they ask me, do you have poppers or do you do poppers? I always say, like, well, if you need to do them, you do them. But I don't need to do them to, like, get off, you know, or to feel better or to loosen up. Like, I just feel like sometimes it becomes this addiction and I don't know. It's a turnoff for me.
Sure.
I did, however, one time at a concert, actually at a Pride concert, someone we know actually had poppers in their pockets. And I was like, what are you doing with poppers at the concert? And he was like, trust me, just like we're drinking. Mm-hmm. We're like tipsy. We're like, someone's performing. I think it was Ashanti or something.
And like, and sure like, wasn't Deborah Cox. She's at all of them.
No, he just put the poppers like next to my nose. He was just like, here, do it. And I did it. And I was like, oh, okay. Like there was a sensation. There was a feeling, you know, it was like that head rush that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And we were having fun and it was Pride Festival. And I was just like, wow, do people really do this?
Yeah, they absolutely do.
And leading on to what people do, I mean, there's another drug that people use. Again, we're not condoning drugs or the use of drugs, but this is just for educational purposes and what they do to the body.
Right.
Cocaine. A lot of people take cocaine, and I've heard that they put it in the butthole because it will like loosen it up or make it numb or something like that.
Yeah, well, cocaine was originally used in medicine as sort of like a numbing agent for doing nasal and facial surgery because it does constrict the blood vessels and everything. But, you know, it's a stimulant, so it's going to make your heart race. It's going to make you go a million miles an hour. I mean, you've seen like the Family Guy where Peter's like all over the place, you know, going crazy. But cocaine in general, you know, it being a stimulant, it also, as with a lot of drugs, leads to poor decisions about protection, consent, even sometimes, you know, can lead to rougher sex than they would normally have. It can make some people have erectile difficulties over time. If you use it in the long run, you know, in the short term, people say it can make it more enhanced. But in the long run, it can make it harder to get an erection and harder to come. And, you know, who wants that? And again, with the stimulant aspect of things, heart attacks, strokes, those sorts of things can happen. And dude, let's face it, it's illegal. If you get caught with cocaine, good luck.
Yeah.
When you guys are talking about cocaine, you said something about putting like drops in the butt. You mean like cocaine in the liquid form?
A sprinkle. They sprinkle it.
It's like salt.
Yeah.
Wow. I never heard of that. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. I've seen a video before where somebody like sprinkled it on their dick and then fucked somebody with it like that. So yeah. Ooh. So I think that's what you're talking about.
But like, no. I don't know why that sounds hot, but I just wouldn't.
But another thing when it comes to drugs that now that it's legal in California, a lot of people talk about is how marijuana enhances orgasms.
They do?
Wow.
Yeah.
I learned something new. I've smoked and I've had edibles, uh-huh. edibles, but they don't make me get horny. I don't get horny off of drugs.
Okay.
I want Taco Bell when I do.
I've done Molly. That's not great. And I've done the edibles. That's not great. It doesn't make me feel a certain way sexually. Yeah.
Well, let's just say how, you know, when you come, it takes about 3 to 4 seconds and you're done. Mm-hmm. When you come with cannabis, it feels like about 15 seconds. It's like a really prolonged, a prolonged orgasm.
So you have to be high.
Yeah.
While you're coming.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So like smoke a little bit before sex or during sex. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'm not telling people to do that. I'm just saying that that's another drug that is common in the community that a lot of people have told me, wow, have you ever tried this? And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, it's intense. So,
wow.
Okay, Snoop Dogg.
maybe I'll try that one. I mean, I'm down. But I know that we're going to do a future episode later about PNP. And I mean, it took me forever to find out that it stood for party and play.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was like poppers and penis. Like I was coming up with my own, like, you know. But what when they say PNP, party and play, the party part is just like, is it cocaine or is it a specific drug or is
it's usually meth.
Meth?
Yeah, because they spell it usually on like apps, they'll spell it P-A-R and then the T is capitalized.
Ooh. Okay, so the capital T thing, yeah, the capital T thing and the PNP is the same drug.
Usually, yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and yeah. that's a tragic drug that has ruined the lives of so many people. And I personally have lost 3 gay friends in my lifetime to crystal meth. So
we want to do a special episode dedicated to that specifically because it's done so much harm, especially to the queer community. But yeah.
Well, I mean, I love a good circuit party more than anybody. And I've been to some amazing ones, but a lot of people in the community have bad issues with drugs. Some people can handle it, but some people have, you know, I personally, in the last year and a half, and there's been no circuit parties in the last 9 months for the most part, I've known 3 or 4 young guys under 40 who died of drug overdoses.
Yeah.
The GHB, you know, you take one too much of that stuff and you stop breathing.
What's GHP?
GHB is gamma hydroxybutyrate. Or G. It's a little drop you put in water and it makes you feel drunk and high. But if you take one drop too much, it turns off your respiratory center in your brain and you stop breathing.
Oh shit.
So
what about ecstasy?
Ecstasy or Molly basically is it's something that happens so it causes a serotonin rush. So all your serotonin in your brain, which causes your happy emotions, just floods out of you. So you get this intense feeling of euphoria and everything you touch feels really great. You know, all this shirt feels really great or all this person's doing, you know, all this, the lights and the music are so amazing, you know, but.
Actually, with Molly, I had that experience. I was so like, like energetic, high, friendly. Hey, what's up, buddy? Buying people drinks at the bar. Like girl, I'm always like that. But then also, it also created the fact that I couldn't get hard.
Right.
And my butthole was just a little bit loose. So it was like, okay.
Yeah.
I had ED and AD.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, and you know, it's almost impossible to come when you're on that stuff. Mm. And I mean, that's kind of a bummer, right? You want to be able to come.
I just tried it once. I did it with my friends and I just didn't like it. It's not.
Or you could just last longer. Like if you look at it that way.
I'd rather take the weed and the bud brownies and anything else.
Yeah.
Erectile dysfunction is also like a big issue as well. I know we're talking, this episode is about butts, but what are your thoughts on like Viagra? I saw that you did a TikTok on that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that with our community is when you're doing butt stuff, you have to have a certain degree of firmness to be able to fuck. And it's, you know, up to 30% of men have problems with erectile dysfunction and blood pressure medications, high blood pressure, diabetes, all different kinds of things can cause problems with people's ability to attain and maintain an erection. Drugs for anxiety or depression can cause it. Viagra and Cialis. Viagra is sildenafil, which is a more short acting thing. It lasts for about, the potential effect lasts for about 4 to 6 hours. It's great. I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. I mean, it will make your dick hard, which is awesome. You know, Cialis works a little longer. So if like we call it the weekender. So if you take it on a Friday, it'll pretty much will give you the opportunity to do it through the whole weekend.
Dang.
But your dick doesn't literally stay hard all weekend. It's just whenever you get aroused.
These drugs do not give you the desire to have sex. They just make it easier to have sex. So if you're stimulated, you get hard.
Okay.
So you're not walking around with the tent pole.
No, because honestly, if you have an erection for more than 4 hours, that's called a priapism. And that can be dangerous. You know, you could do some damage down there.
So like after you bust your nut, does the drug like deactivate?
No, it doesn't deactivate. Your just dick goes down naturally. Like if you didn't take it, but it's just easier to get another hard on.
Oh, okay. Mm. So it comes into play when you're getting the hard.
When you're stimulating.
Yeah. So this is all about getting hard. This has nothing to do with sex drive or coming or anything else. It's all about getting hard.
And now, can you be too young to be taking like Viagra and these, you know?
When it comes to these things, if you need it at that age, then you need it at that age for whatever reason. But if you are a very young person and you're having erectile dysfunction, you should see a urologist to figure out why it's happening. Because it could be a warning for early heart disease, early peripheral vascular disease, or other things, or even some sort of pituitary problem or other endocrine problem that needs to be addressed. So
these are prescription drugs, right?
These are prescription drugs.
So you have to go see a doctor first.
Yeah.
I mean, do people lie and say like, oh, I can't get a hard on, but they just want it?
Of course. Because... I mean, we don't make you prove it in the doctor's office. You know? You can't get a hard on. Okay. Look at this.
You answered my next question.
Right? And since we're talking about hard ons and dicks right now, we want to talk about tops and teaching them about the bottoms and how bottoms should take control and take the lead because, again, we want to deflect that stigma of like, don't let the top overpower you.
Exactly.
What if I like that though?
Well, I mean, it's great and kinky, but at the same rate, you got to be cautious because once that dick goes in and he like forces it in, you can, like he said earlier, it hurts and you could tear.
Listen, the first couple of minutes of bottoming can be harrowing for anybody, right? It can be really difficult those first couple of minutes to get comfortable, to get loose, to get relaxed. You know, some people it's not a big deal, but for a lot of people, you have to be able to loosen up and be able to, and then be able to enjoy it. So what I like to tell bottoms who are new is get cleaned out because you don't want anything in your garage that's going to get in the way. You know, lubricate really well. And I like silicone lube because it's really slippery. Do the butt clock thing that I was telling you about as far as like relaxing your hole, and then have the bottom sit down on the dick first because the bottom is controlling how deep and how fast it goes in. You know, if a dick is big, either in length or girth, you need a little bit more time getting used to it. If it's smaller, no big deal. But definitely especially with those thicker dicks, you need some time to let things really expand and relax so that you can take them. So I recommend the bottom getting on top, sliding down gently and slowly all the way down until you have it all in there. And then a friend of mine who's a Middle Eastern, who's actually right now in the Middle East, and he's telling me about how he's getting pounded left and right all day by all these massively hung Moroccan dudes. He was telling me that what he does is once he gets it in there, he does one of those anal Kegels and squeezes really tight on it. And number one, it feels really great for the top because they have something really squeezing down on it hard. But as soon as he releases, it relaxes open and allows himself.
Oh yeah. To
enjoy it. I
do that.
I do that too. When I go up and down, I do Kegels on the dick. So I
was like, hey. Dude, that is a talent. That makes you memorable.
Wow.
Well, apparently not, because I've been dry all this pandemic. All right. Well, Dr. Carlton, thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, we've learned a lot about the butt.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we left out or...
I think we covered most of it. You know, I wanted to tell you all about my social media links. I'm at Dr. Carlton, DrCarlton, on TikTok and on Instagram. And I want your listeners and viewers to know that if you have any private or personal questions you want to ask me, I check my DMs every day. I don't leave a question unanswered. So you don't necessarily need to follow me or... I don't need to follow you back or whatever you're comfortable with is fine. I typically follow most people back except for on TikTok where I have a limit. But I keep everything private and personal so that if you have, and I have a lot of things prepackaged on Instagram in particular, like a 20-year-old will say, oh, I'm about to bottom for my first time. I don't know what to do. Well, I have all this stuff sectioned out, douching, diet, bottoming, STIs, PrEP, HIV, awesome. Anything you need to know. And then some of my comedy stuff that I do too, because not only do I do, you know, butt stuff, but I do some comedic stuff on there too. To do what I do, you have to have a certain sense of humor, right?
Right. Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I've been following you and I love your content. It's hilarious. And thank you so much for the love as well and shouting us out.
Absolutely.
And support. And he was also our first donor for the podcast. So we really, really appreciate that as well. And I believe you also have the Trevor Project on your links for
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. So some really important links for your viewers. If you have issues with your medical care and you want a gay doctor or you want somebody who understands you, you're LGBTQ and you want somebody who understands you a little bit better, there's a website called GLMA, the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association, .org. So GLMA.org, you can put in your zip code and you can find a doctor that is comfortable or themselves LGBTQ. So you can feel more comfortable with your doctor. A lot of people say, oh, I don't want to talk to my doctor because, you know, I don't want them to know that I'm taking it up the ass. Well, your doctor needs to know that stuff. If you don't tell them what you're doing, we don't know what to check. So you need to find somebody who's comfortable with you. The other thing is that you mentioned, the trevorproject.org has a great coming out handbook. So if you're terrified about coming out, they have a handbook that tells you how to come out and each step of the way, all the different, you know, steps of coming out. They also have a suicide hotline. And let's face it, our LGBTQ teens really need that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, one more question. Should we be afraid to ask anything with our GI doctors if we can't find a gay doctor or like...
Listen, it's your body and you have to have your problems addressed and there's no way for us to know. You know, some straight doctors may be a little bit taken aback, but they'll sit back for a second and then go with the flow with the questions. I mean, you know, we are doctors and we've heard it all. And if you find a judgment kind of reaction from people, then just go to somebody else.
Yeah, because I wanted to, I asked my doctor about getting a colon cancer screening because I had a friend that it'll be almost a year that they passed away from colon cancer. Mm-hmm. And they had polyps everywhere and on their liver and everything. So I just kind of got worried because he was 38 years old and I'm close to being 38 this year. So,
Well, like I said, generally, unless you're having symptoms or unless you have a family history, we don't even recommend screening until about 45. But if it's something that concerns you and you're that proactive about it, you can't go wrong by having one done. It's just about a matter of really of getting your insurance to cover things. And that's one of the things that's kind of frustrating for me is I deal with a lot of people who are undocumented in San Diego. I live 6 miles from the border and they don't have insurance and they have to pay cash for everything. And it breaks my heart because I mean, we have the lowest cash price available in probably in California for colonoscopies and endoscopies, but it's still a financial burden for people. And you shouldn't, you know, all humans should have that their right to access healthcare.
Thank you for sharing that information with us and just, you know, being of service to our communities.
Well, thank you.
And, you're more than welcome to come back anytime and share with us some news or what if we missed any more butt stuff.
Well, I'm here for you if you need me. And like I said, I'm available to answer questions that people have.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Collinson. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, guys. That's it. He wore us out. So we're good. Time to do Kegels again. We'll be right back with the Homo Homie podcast. Oh my goodness, and we are back. Girl, my booty hole is palpitating right now.
I'm doing some Kegels right now.
Mm-hmm.
I actually do them all the time.
I need my gooch licked up right now. But Dr. Carlton shared so much information, valuable information, and I didn't know about the to take out the douche water.
How did you not? I'm sorry, but how did you not know that?
Well, they're already in there. I thought it was like a pre-douche, you know, like, oh, here you
it's
go,
like
ready.
Bottoming okay. 101.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know. I'm airheaded like that sometimes, okay?
Wow.
Give me a break.
Yeah, because the chemical that comes packaged in there, like when you buy it at CVS or Walgreens, like that stuff is harsh for your butthole. It creates like the irritation. So you empty it out, you wash it out, and then you put warm water. And then... I don't know. I feel like you should be good after like 3 squirts.
I'm on the one.
But you're like a whole hour.
No wonder I got a hemorrhoid.
Oh my God.
And then also about the cannabis, about how edibles make you last a little bit longer when you're ejaculating.
It makes the sensation of the coming last longer.
I don't know if I have ever had that when I was on.
No. I mean, I've had sex with guys who are high, like they're high, mm-hmm. like they smoked weed or whatever. But I mean, I'm not a smoker, so I wasn't high with them. I was secondhand high.
Did you ever taste their cum when they came and taste the highness or no?
No, it doesn't move that fast.
I was just asking.
No, I have tasted it, but it doesn't move that fast. Like, oh, I just smoked 10 minutes ago and now my cum tastes like weed. Yeah. I mean, pineapple, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Pineapple, yes.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed our fun butt time with learning all about the anal region, your asshole, your booty hole.
Your gooch
and your taint. But we want to leave off with this little quote that I found on them.us. And it says, what you enjoy sexually says nothing about your social importance, your power, your masculinity, your femininity, your gender identity, your attractiveness, your desirability, or your worth. It's just sex. Enjoy it. Do what feels good, but be safe. Alexander Chavez. So...
yes, especially the safe part.
Yeah. Always recommend to use protection, guys. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. And it depends on how you define your protection. Because we've talked about what the different definitions of safe sex mean.
Just safety first. That's about it, guys. Just know your worth.
And please try to share this episode with some of your friends. I was going to say, share it with your bottoms. Like, put it in the gay chats, in the gay WhatsApp or the gay, you know.
Gays over COVID. Share it with anybody. And don't forget to check out our website, thehomohomiepodcast.com, and see what features we have out there. And also the donation part of it as well.
Yeah. So Dr. Carlton actually donated his earnings from TikTok. He's a TikTok content creator. And we're so honored and thankful and grateful that he was able to donate to the website. And yeah. So you guys that are listening, you can support us by donating. Or you could just share this episode. You can follow us on social media at the Homo Homie Podcast.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. And thank you to Dr. Carlton and his lovely husband for telling and sharing their stories. And thank you, Jose, for always being here and guiding me through our episodes. Mm-hmm. And thank you to you, the listener, for always supporting us and finding out what we have going on.
Up our butts.
Up our butts. You're so stupid. All right, guys. Remember to always be good or be good at it, but be safe. Love you.
Bye, guys.